The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. During this hour, we're setting it aside for you to call in and share your challenges, your points of view, your concerns, your questions. Let us get an idea of how you see the issues that are dealt with every day and in different parts of the country, like WPFW in Washington. I tend to take on issues that are relevant to those individuals working within the government because tens of thousands of people in Washington listen for 25 years to my show on PFW each week. But in Los Angeles, it's a different audience. 28 years, 6 hours, every Tuesday midnight, actually it's Wednesday morning. On the West Coast, it's midnight to 6. On the East Coast, it's 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. It's 6 hours. Serious topics, always ending with 1 to 2 to 3 hours of people having a chance to share their points of view. And because it is 6 hours, lots of materials covered. In New York, it's different. On all the non-commercial stations, including WBAI, we start with health and nutrition, healing, environmental information that we need to know that can impact us, hopefully in a positive way, then issues that are important to all of us in giving people a chance to call in and share their points of view. Then we take listeners' emails that could not get through. They're somewhere in the world, so we address those, one or two or three. And then our guest of the day, and that's a full program. Generally, 7 areas are hit. And over the years, it's 34 years now on Pacifica, the longest-running non-commercial radio program, you have a chance to realize that we all deserve to be healthy and happy, but we all look at a problem differently. So what I'm going to do today is ask you, how do you see our problems? What perspective do you bring to them? Because the perspective you bring to them is the prism that you look through that will be a refraction of your reality, meaning that who was in our life, what teachings we've had, what personal experiences we had, all of that will give us our current state of reality. But it may not match anyone else's. It may be balanced or imbalanced. It may be good or bad. So we're going to take a look now, so it's your turn. Give us a call. Be happy to take your calls. Now to our first caller.
Hello there. Yeah, I was just listening to the taped version from December 12th. And he mentioned that Gary Webb killed himself, but I find that hard to believe when there were two bullet holes to the back of the head. And one of the things that he discovered was that they were selling crack cocaine, which they studied at UCLA, to find out which was the most addictive drugs. And they sold it exclusively in black neighborhoods. So there is such thing as genocide. And there's been so many things against black people done, and his whole thing about power, I think that's just BS. So it's just that we've been experimented on. There's so many conspiracies that have been done to black people, especially the crack cocaine, everything, and I'm very insulted by the whole thing, the thing like that, because all those other things are other reasons. There's lots of reasons for what things are wrong in the world, but there is a thing like white supremacy and things that were done to Haiti, things like that, and you just can't blanket it. And there's people that are who do try to do good in the third world, and they are corrupted or killed or whatever, and they install the most evil people like Mubarak or whatever, and that's what happens. So there is a power structure, and there is a upper 1% that does not think like we do. They think they own everybody, but there has been definite genocide against minorities and Kissinger even said himself that he, one of the best things that to do is to make sure that the third world does not grow, that brown people do not grow, things like that, to depopulate them and things like that. So I don't want to hear any BS about power. This is just a power structure thing. No, there's different reasons why different people do evil things. So thank you very much.
All right. I appreciate your input. Let's just analyze that for a moment then. Take any genocide in history, the pogroms against the Jews, in particular during the Crusade, 1296, 1297, 1298, the first seven Crusades. Who were the first victims? The Jews en route to the Holy Land. What was the purpose of dealing with the Muslims at that time? Well, it was principally to gain control over what they had, and therefore to establish a dominant religion, almost always with the Native Americans of North America. It was to take the land, but it was also in taking that land, as the Spanish did in South and Central America, and in the Dominican Republic, where Columbus landed, and later in Cuba, and in the southern part of the United States, in Florida. It was to establish a dominant religion, and those who chose not to participate in that religion were not redeemable. Redeemable for whom? For the church. Why? The church and the crown always shared power. Sometimes they were one and the same, but not always. And as a result, it was whoever controlled the land, who controlled the resources, who controlled the commerce, who controlled a body politic, did so using power. When you have a gang in South Central Los Angeles, and you have more than 227 gangs, no longer small groups of gangs, and the gangs in the United States are exponentially expanding. Not yet fully out of the ghettos, but that will come in the next few years. Why would a person join a gang? What happens when you're in a gang? Is it where everyone has their say? Is it like Occupy Wall Street, where you'll have 1,000 people, each one having their own idea of what to do, why they're there? Each one can be completely right in being against something that is what? It's about people who have what? Power. What gives them power? Well, and sometimes it's having the ability to make laws. Why does ALEC, a consortium of corporations, why do they meet in secret with state legislators and federal legislators and have an army of over 40,000 consultants and lobbyists, most of whom are former top people within Congress? Why do they have them? Why do they pay them $1 million a year? One of them from the House of Representatives, who ushered in the Medicare bill, $2 million. And then the head of the Pharmaceutical Advertising Council. Why would you give someone $2 million a year? Because they are articulate, well-dressed? No. Access to whom? Power. Because those who control power control the levers of a society. Henry Kissinger was an architect of power. The secret bombings in Cambodia, which killed more than 600,000 Cambodians. He has never been held accountable for that, yet he should, because there is no statute of limitations on crimes against humanity. Yet Noriega is rotting in a jail in Panama after in France and after in the United States. Why? Why would he be kept in jail for smuggling drugs and facilitating the smuggling of drugs when all the people in those areas of the world were smuggling drugs? Because he was doing it with the full cooperation and knowledge of then head of the CIA, George Bush, who would later become president. How would that look if he suddenly had an opportunity to tell his story to the public about all that he did, who was involved? Then everything involving Iran-Contra would become known, and therefore Reagan's legacy of supporting the Contras as our modern freedom fighters, as equaling them to the founding fathers, that would be shattered, because Noriega would tell the truth about how down and dirty it was, because he was the facilitating point. All the arms would go through Panama and from Panama into El Salvador and Nicaragua to be used by Samoa's former National Guard, who were the Contra and the mercenaries that were hired. He was facilitating all that. In turn, massive amounts of cash were given. He took a percentage. And therefore, the story of Gary Webb would be better illustrated. I knew Gary Webb. I knew him personally. I had him on my program. I was there the day that he was honored at Columbia University for receiving the one of the very first awards for Project Censored. And the publisher, Dan Simon, was my publisher. And I helped with the royalties from my Egg Project to publish not only his book, but Abby Hoffman and about 100 other authors' books who were good and important books but not commercially viable. And I donated my royalties so they could have those books published, because we had a monster bestseller and I chose to do that. Now, was it suicide? I don't know. All I know is what we were told, since there was no post-inquest. I do know that up until his suicide, he had given up in conversations multiple times. He felt that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Chandler family, they were against him. Because, once again, what would it do? It would expose a power source that we would then look upon differently. We would then change our perception. And what gives someone power? Controlling perception. If you have one gun with six bullets and there are 12 people, it's likely that if they had charged you, they would be able to get the gun out of your hand. Now, which of those six want to be shot and killed? And that's why the gun becomes the power base of a deterrent. It equalizes the power of 12, or 20, or 1,000. So when you look at genocide, any genocide, the Union Pacific Railroad went through Indian lands and, working with corrupt legislators, including senators, was able to usurp the land. They promised the Indians in 1,333 separate treaties, all of which were broken, and I wrote about in Stopping the Genocide Machine, All-American Genocide Machine, that they would be given separate land. That was not true, and what land on occasion they were given was always the worst of land, and it was not land that they could any longer sustain themselves on. But what happened? What caused them to finally abdicate and surrender? Guns. Insurmountable waves of troops deployed against them. And then the consequences of fighting people who were power. They couldn't eat. They were starving. Subjugating. And then when the people who were the power within their own communities were killed, it's like killing the alpha wolf. Frequently, when the alpha male and females are killed, then the other wolves sometimes starve to death because there's no one leading them on a hunt. So now let's go back to South Central Los Angeles. When you're in a gang, you're in a gang for what reason? When you go out of that neighborhood, when you start going into other neighborhoods now where there are foreclosures and you know that there is no patrol and you can hide in houses and you can find out who else is there, and these are poorer people, you have power. You have power in numbers. When 40 people run through a store in a wolf pack and take whatever they want and run out, and the person watching these people, they're overwhelmed by what? If it was one person of the same size, they might try to stop them. When they're 40, you don't, because you're not able to. They have the equalization of excess numbers. Who walks down the red carpets? What if you want to go to a movie and you're watching people as they enter a premiere. This week it was Tom Cruise and his wife with his new Mission Impossible film. What if you were the lighting technician, the assistant director? What if you were the makeup person and the stylist who spent hours? What if you were the special effects person that had to create all the green screen harness drops? What if you were the person doing the animation from one of the animation studios, either Pixar or George Lucas or the fella from Titanic and Avatar, Cameron, who all have their own special effects that make the movie so exciting to watch? Are any of those individuals walking the red carpet? No. Are they getting the big bucks? No. They're paid, and frequently paid well, but they're not getting back-end points. Then who controls the film? The person who puts up the money. They're guaranteed dollar one from the first dollar that comes in. At the minor end, it's a net profit, and no one's ever seen a net profit penny in Hollywood. It doesn't exist. It's an oxymoron. Why would you get yours first? Why would you eat first? Why would the lion eat before the lionesses, though the lionesses did the kill? Power. How is it that over 6,000 priests were able to commit massive systemic pedophilia and get away with it? It wasn't because of the Pope, or the man who is now Pope, who for over 30 years was one of the most powerful and then the most powerful cardinal at Vatican City, who hid these individuals. No. The reason in the United States and other countries is because, including in Ireland, is because the most powerful Catholics, and who were the most powerful Catholics? The bankers, the business people, the individuals who held the Catholic community together, who were the anchors of that community, they're the ones who kept the lid on this. Just like Joe Paterno at Penn State. What if he, the most powerful coach, what if he would have chosen to have said at the very first hint that there was a scandal, sexual molestation by Sandusky, what if he would have said, you can't do this, this is morally wrong? It would have been over. There would have been no more from that man happening there. He chose not to. As did the heads of the communities who knew that there was sexual molestation and chose not to destroy the church. Their fear was that if this scandal gets out, it will destroy the church. So in time, large amounts of money were gathered to pay off the victims, to silence them. Only later, when it all broke forth, did the people who had been paid by the local diocese come forward. And then it was a whole hierarchical structure of power from the priest to the cardinals and the bishops, and then the business community leaders. They all were aware of it. The Boston, the Chicago, the New York diocese all were in on it, meaning they knew. Look at the business roundtable. Now pull back for a moment. Have you heard any demonstrations against them? Yet they are the most powerful people in America, in a relatively small number. Any given one of the individuals who sits at the monthly meeting of the business roundtable has influence over anywhere from 20 to 100 corporations. Even corporations that you'll never see their name associated with. If I ask you, name me each of the regional Federal Reserve banks, could you name even the city where they're at, let alone who are the primary shareholders? These are for-profit institutions. The actual amount of money that they received in the bailout was $29 trillion. That is the latest accurate number from a group of economists in Brooklyn at a college who did the actual analysis. $29 trillion that these people received. Not all of that was unpaid. Some were overnight loans, but at least $16 trillion of that was not overnight loans. It went with no collateral except washing out bad debts. Could you go to a bank today and say, look, I'm broke. I'm like the average American. I have 154% debt to my asset, meaning for every asset dollar I have, my car, my home, I owe $1.54. So would you take this old car that's only worth $400 and make it worth $40,000? And could you take this house in Detroit? The average house in Detroit is now worth $6,000. Could you make it worth $600,000 on your books so you can give me a loan and we'll call it even, zero interest? You won't tell me if I ever have to pay it back. And the person say, are you nuts? No, I'm not going to do that. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve allowed to happen with Citigroup, $2.2 trillion. With Bank of America, $1.7 trillion. Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, they all receive hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars. And they gave what was called junk collateral with 0.2% interest, which is zero. These were not overnight loans between banks. These were ways of bailing them out, and it was done in secret. Why did one group of individuals get it and you and I not? Power. When Obama doubled down in Afghanistan, he did so because of whom? Those who hold power that everyone fears, the permanent military industrial intelligence spy complex, those people who passed the FISA bill. They broke the law, they were illegally spying on us, and yet they continued, and they got the law passed, including by Obama and others, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, and now the defense appropriations that he promised to veto, he passed. Now any American, for any reason that is deemed a threat to the president and those around him, can be arrested indefinitely without representation and held, not in a civil jail, but or a criminal setting in the United States, but in a military facility anywhere in the world. And all this, how did they do it? Power. Only 6 senators out of 100 challenged them. Why? Because what comes if you challenge them, and what comes if you support them? Those at the court, throughout history, that have abided genocide, have done so because of access to what comes from power. Titles, land, wealth, and continuing in that moment to have the ability to control your own life, providing that you play by the rules that are dictated. All of these courts are Machiavellian. Every empire lasts approximately 220 years and then declines because the power that was central and in absolute control begins to fray. It begins to cannibalize itself. So, look at your red carpet. Look at who gets the attention. Look at the people who are threatened. Right now, Newt Gingrich, who is incapable of dealing honestly, ethically, or in any way that would benefit the people, he is strictly tied to all power bases. Same with Mitt Romney. And who is the one person that represents a threat in their party? Ron Paul. Lots of foolish, stupid things Ron Paul has done that I and any reasonable person would oppose. But what he's done right, he's challenged the military-industrial complex. And that's something they can't handle. That's something they won't handle. So they have to diminish him and diminish his power. And that's why when the first three people in Iowa come in, they'll say they all have a chance. But then when he went to the top in at 23% in Iowa, then they said it's who comes in second or third that matters, not the person who comes in first. They can't even wrap their mind around what to do with a man who would close down the entire military-industrial complex around the world, depriving those people of nearly $1 trillion a year in resources, as well as closing down the Federal Reserve, as well as closing down the supplements for all the major industries, which is another $1 trillion, for the gas industry. Even though he is pro-nuclear, he doesn't believe in subsidizing. Well, without subsidizing, you couldn't have nuclear, because 80% of all the costs going into creating a nuclear facility are paid for by the public in guarantees. Obama gave $36 billion just in the last year to these consortiums. And who are these consortiums? Individuals. And how did they get together? Because they collectively pooled assets. What does that allow them? The power. And that's why the 1% that you talk about, as if they are the problem, the 1% have access to debt. And when you have access to debt, that gives you power to buy. Because if you go in and say, I have $1 and I want to buy something that costs $60, and equity partnerships do this all the time when they take over another business. They don't have all the capital to buy that. They have to use debt. And Wall Street uses bridge loans for 10% up front and the ability to get stock that is non-reserve so they can pump and dump afterward. They get that debt. And that debt allows them to buy their competition, to give themselves massive bonuses. That's how the game is played. But what if you're a small savings loan? What if you're a small credit union? Can you go out and buy another asset? Can you buy your competition that is $60 times more than your asset? No, you cannot. So there's a different set of rules that are given to those in power. And that's how it works, and always has throughout all of history. And when we say, well, the feminist movement was men have been depriving women of their rights, and it kept them. And that's why we had Susan B. Anthony and suffragettes. And that's why we had women who couldn't get the title to their own property. It would have to go to a son rather than the mother. All of these rights that women fought for throughout our entire history. And in the definitive book on this by Barbara Seaman, the great feminist myself, 1,600-page book called For Women Only, we define each and every step in this process to lay this out. So when you say the women have been deprived and depressed of their rights, I say yes. But then let me show you 100 million men who've died on battlefields as fodder, where those in power never risked themselves or their own family members in any of those battles. They were not in the Seine in the First World War. They were safe, ensconced in their gilded cages. You didn't see the Rockefeller brothers, any of the five. You did not see the Schiffs. You did not see the Warburgs. You did not see the Rockefellers, the Goulds, the Mellons, the Swearingens, the Hills, the Astors. You didn't see any of them in the front lines, nor would you. Nor did you see Bill Clinton or Dick Cheney or George Bush, even though he was in the National Guard. But that's because his father got him out of it. And who was his immediate father's father? Prescott Bush, a man who was as neck deep in the power in the financial industry as anyone in this country. So if you want to play in that game, you are nurtured, you are led into it, you're invited into it. Bill Clinton, a charismatic man, was invited to be a member by Winthrop Rockefeller, the governor of Arkansas, into the Trilateral Commission, into the Council on Foreign Relations. He was nurtured. He had an extremely bad background. Everyone knew he was a serial womanizer. Everyone knew he was receiving the payoffs from the state police and the others for the MENA, Arkansas drug, because it was one of the points where the guns and drugs for Iran-Contra were coming through. One man who helped expose that, named SIBO, was killed. They tried to make it look like a suicide. His brother, who's a physician, has shown that it wasn't. I wrote an article on it. It's on my website, showing that it was not suicide. But you don't interfere in how they use their power without being pointed. Look at all the doctors. Go up and look at the people. She's getting death threats already yesterday and today because Dr. Humphreys did a filmed interview with me last week. It's on my website, talking about how vaccines are non-scientific. They do not stimulate the natural immune system that can be proven to be the gold standard for protecting you against measles, mumps, or the flu, or anything else. She defines it, but so she is not alone. I have the Harvard MD beside her. I have three major physicians, all filmed, all up on GaryNall.com and ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, talking about why there is no real science behind our public health fraud of vaccination. We call it immunization. It is not immunization. We have dozens of physicians who can show this. We have millions of patients, including parents whose children were normal till they got all these vaccines and then their children became autistic or brain damaged or suffered some other condition. Why is it they are given no authority at all, yet the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists, and the CDC and the FDA who administer these, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, are given 100% of the truth because they control the power. And who controls the power controls the media, and the media is what creates perception. So if the perception is that without doing the vaccines you are irresponsible and you're affecting other people, then vaccines continue. Yet the truth is different. The truth is always different. And now look at AIDS. Today, for the first time, you will see the complete interview that I have with Professor Kerry Mullis, the winner of the Nobel Prize, 1993 prize in science for the PCR, polymerase chain reaction, which has been used as a gold standard in AIDS determination of viral load and viral replication. And yet he denounces this. He, you will hear him, see him, in my interview in California, walking on the beach in his home, talking about how when he looked for the truth, was HIV actually isolated and purified? He could not find it. He believed it was. He wrote an article, but when he went to verify it, he couldn't. 2 years later, he started to see that there was a lie. How could so many scientists, how could so many doctors, how could so many people be so wrong? And anyone who went up against them, like Peter Duisberg, arguably the finest virologist and molecular biologist in American history, original founding member of the National Academy of Science, professor tenured at UCLA at Berkeley, how could he be wrong also? Well, he wasn't, and nor was professor of science and genetics who discovered the protease inhibitors. Rasnik, was also right, but they made him wrong. Every single person who came forward and challenged the HIV equals AIDS week is death paradigm was destroyed. By whom? By the people who had the most to lose if the truth came out. And how did they do it? Using the power of the media, the power of the purse, by not allowing them to have any funding, by making them persona non grata. Well, now look at the interview. Watch it for yourself. Look at the actual science, and you'll see we've been living a lie on public health, in AIDS, in mental health, making up mental diseases. Who does this? Groups of people. Why do they do it? Because they can control the diagnosing of diseases that do not exist, giving them artificial standards like brain chemical imbalance when there's no such proof of that at all anywhere in the literature, and then giving them drugs to treat it forever. And no one ever gets better, no one's ever cured. So they live by these frauds. Well, how do they do it? The power of collective control over a field. All the pharmaceutical people work together. They control the advertising. They control who gets the money in Congress. If you want to know who were the people who wanted to support the pipeline going from Canada to Texas, look at who received the most amount of money. If you want to see who supported the Medicare bill, look at the Congress people who got the most money. If you want to see who supports anything, look who gets the money. And why do they give them this money? Because it allows them to continue control in a field. So no matter where you look, at the bottom of everything is power. Why? Because power allows you control for that moment over the circumstances, the direction, and the outcome that you're seeking. If it's profits, now what are the methods that you use to control it? Well, genocide happens to be a method. It is a messy method. It is a sloppy method. But it is the method. It is no different than Hitler's final solution. And the final solution was written in the 1800s. In 1883, long before Hitler, there were people talking about eugenics, not in Germany, but in the United States. We had a very active eugenics movement, including Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood. She was a eugenicist. She believed that we should eliminate 10% of the population because they were feeble-minded. If you happen not to be educated, if you happen to be a wanton woman, a sexually promiscuous woman, you were up for sterilization in North Carolina in 1933, but earlier in other states, in Arkansas also. And Dr. Popenpohl, a eugenicist. We had a very active academic eugenics movement in the late 1800s and early 1900s in the United States. The Rockefeller brothers supported the eugenics movements. And so when a Dr. Rubin in Germany decided it would be one good way to get rid of all these people in mental institutions, they actually held up and toasted all across Germany when 300,000 people in mental institutions were euthanized. They were killed. That's genocide. Why did they do it? The power of control. They could control those individuals who would be a part of their system and those who they wanted to exclude. Well, who've been excluded? Minorities, African Americans. There, sir, you are correct. People of different skins. Why did we commit genocide in Vietnam? What color was their skin? We called them yellow-skinned. Well, if you've ever been around them, there's no yellow skin. It's just a different form of pigmentation. But we didn't award them the same humanistic or spiritual values. We did not look at them. No different than Barack Obama had not one word in his speech about how when we left Iraq officially, but left 16,000 armed mercenaries paid $1,200 a day by major military contractors and giving them $30 to $50 billion to keep the 66 major buildings in this 1.5 square mile zone in the largest embassy in the world so we could control what? The power of geopolitical influence against Iran and Syria and oil. It was always about the oil. That's who got the contracts, those the multinationals. So who was really behind it? Was it the generals? No, it was not the generals. It's never been the generals. Whether it was Smedley Butler, the most decorated soldier in American history, the only winner of two Congressional Medals of Honor. No, it was they were the tools of power. And when you have the tool to use that power, they line up. If you do not line up, then you are dealt with. Whether it's John F. Kennedy assassinated, Robert F. Kennedy assassinated, was Kennedy assassinated when he was pro-assassinating the Diem brothers and throwing them out because the Diem brothers, the president of Vietnam and his brother who headed up the army, were no longer in alignment with the CIA station chief at that time. And that's what caused it. Have you ever heard that the person behind the assassination of the Diem brothers was, in fact, not the Kennedys initially, but rather Cabot Lodge, who was on top of that? Now, take a look at Colson. Take a look at the people who were really instrumental. But why did they do it? Because the Diem brothers stood in the way of controlling the resources. And it's the resources we cared about. No different than why we took over Panama from Colombia. Because we wanted the resources, including a route of resource delivery. The same was true for the Suez Canal. The same has always been true. when Robert Kennedy went from being a part of the power clique that was ruthless. He and his brother got us, kept us into Vietnam, and then did anything they could. But when he turned around after his brother died, and he decided to become a humanistic spiritual being, a true progressive, and what did he do? He went into Appalachia. He went into the areas where there were poor people. And they killed him because of that and blamed it on Sirhan Sirhan. Because they couldn't afford someone who was that charismatic, that smart, that giving to touch the hearts of Americans. So what do we have instead? We have politicians that never touch our heart. They entertain us. They're bloviators. And so we buy into the person that looks presidential. What does that mean? Well, they look presidential. You don't want Ron Paul. His suit doesn't hang right. He's got those strange eyebrows, you know. He doesn't have that way of cachet of carrying himself. But Mitt Romney could go through a hurricane and his hair would never be out of place. Let's vote for him to be the most powerful person in the world because we like how he looks. Let's make the Kardashians the most popular show on television, on cable television, because she's got a giant ass. That's the only quality she has. She's a shrew, she's manipulative, she's pathological. That we don't care about that. You know, we just care that she's got this giant ass. Then who is the problem? Is it the media that gives us these images we're supposed to love and adore and worship, the people walking up a red carpet as if somehow they're better and more special? The things we're supposed to buy that we can't afford, the things we're supposed to do without thinking, the pollution we cause, the indifference, then who is the 1% and who's the 99%? You mean all of us who are on the 99% have angels sleeping on our shoulders? That we are the gifted ones, we're simply abused and used by those in power? Is that how it works? And everyone who's 1% are ruthless, greedy, without heart or soul? Is that the reality? No, it is not. We have children born today who will not outlive their parents. We have adult diabetes at epidemic level in children. We have more obesity than at any time in American history, and we're the fattest nation in the world per population. We have more people engaging in illegal, unethical, greedy acts within that 99% than at every time in our history. We have people who sign liar's loans. We have people who said, yeah, I make $300,000 a year, I'll sign on that, because they had a chance to get some of their power, the power that money would give them. But how would it give them? The method of getting an artificial environmental blow up in the value of their home. They were part of the bubble rising up. Well, okay, I'll lie about it, but we also first have to lie about the value. We have to lie that this land is worth this amount, and this house is worth this amount, so someone else is going to have to lie. So we have all these co-conspirators all facilitating this because everyone was getting something, not least of all the person who was living in that. Who was the person who said, no, I won't sign this loan? It's not right. I make $40,000 a year. I don't make $400,000 a year. What if this market goes bad? What if I'm ever challenged on this? I'm not going to do that. How many people said that? How many people said, I will not sign up for a student loan that allows me to pay usurious rates if I graduate from school and am out of a job? I can't do that. That doesn't make sense. We look at what we gain. We look at what we get in the short term. We don't look at the long term. Instantaneous gratification. And people are fully aware in power of what our real desires are because they create the desires. Instant gratification. I want what I want. I want it now. See that red car I see on television with the hot guy or the hot woman? If I buy that red car, even though I can't afford it, even the monthly payments will go higher than what I can pay, even though the value of that car is going to drop by 60% the moment I drive it off the lot, I got to have it now. I got to have a wardrobe full of clothes that I'll never wear now. I got to be able to throw 30% of all that I buy at a food store away, enough to feed the entire population of India for 1 year now. Why? Why do you need to believe in the messages? Why not trust intuition? So take an honest, more careful, more measured look at those in power. then you'll see that Barack Obama is perfect. All the people around him are also perfect, whether it was someone like Vilsack, who's Secretary of Treasury, like the person who's granted all the offshore leases for deep drilling, and all the other people. They all represent institutions that understand what it means to put people who will facilitate. These are the facilitators, and those facilitators, you must reward them. You must go to them and say, you do our bidding today, you will be comfortable in all ways tomorrow. Look at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton now is worth about $160 million. His foundation approaching $1 billion. And so look what we gave him for giving us NAFTA, globalization. Look what we gave him when he did not intercede in Rwanda, but he did intercede in Yugoslavia and Bosnia and allowed us to have what we wanted there. Look at all the things that he did when he took away the Glass-Steagall Act. Man, did that help us, because now we have credit default swap and derivative trading, and he allowed all that. But look what we did for him. And then look at everyone else. Look at Gephardt, who represented the pharmaceutical industry, the profitable insurance industry, and the for-profit hospital industry. And he was Obama's choice to become the head of our entire health program, the Health and Human Services Secretary, until there was a scandal. He had been receiving $5 million a year as a consultant. Did they not know that about him? Of course they knew that about him. But again, he is a master facilitator, just like the general. So do you blame the Army? Do you blame the PFC for the rape and the killing? Do you blame the lieutenant, the general, who covered it up? Do you blame the Pentagon brass? Do you blame the commander-in-chief? Who do you blame? In the end, power. Because they needed to control something, they needed to gain something, and that's how they used it. So we have confused the methods of which we get something, and frequently that creates genocide. Because why did we have slavery? It was free labor. All we had to do was pay for the slave and make sure that you got good women slaves, because they could have a lot of children and you would have slaves in perpetuity. And you didn't have to pay them. All you had to feed them was what you wouldn't eat. The entrails of a pig. You would give them the color greens because it was a green you wouldn't eat because it was a bitter. Let them eat chitlins. And that's how it went. What would happen if you had to have paid them a living wage and treated them with respect and given them good housing? Would you have made enough profit for yourself off your cotton or your sugar cane? Look at the reason behind slavery. Look at the reason behind how we deal with someone who challenges us. Look at how we dealt with Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass. And then you'll see why it is power that is the problem. And it's not just the power of the 1%. It is the refusal of the 99% to engage in using their power. If we chose to stop paying all student loans, if we stopped allowing the largest single collection of cash in the United States in the private sector is in the retirement and pension funds. It's $17 trillion. But hold on a second. That's the 99%. Who's using that $17 trillion? Hedge funds, equity partnerships, Bank America, Citibank. Hold on, that doesn't make any sense. You mean we're giving the money to the 1% to use against us? Yes. We're shopping in their box stores like Walmart, where they've eviscerated our structure of closing 44,000 factories in the last 10 years, causing millions of Americans to lose their jobs so they can make more profit in India and China? Yes. Well, shouldn't I then demand that my pension trustees no longer put money into these? Yes. And shouldn't I stop buying anything in these major box stores? Yes. And shouldn't I stop watching their television? Shouldn't I take my money out of their bank? Shouldn't I no longer buy their clothes? Yes. Shouldn't I stop buying in the box store Whole Foods and they're buying their food and buy instead of local food co-ops and organic food and health food stores? Yes, you should buy there. Will I? No. Will I help my neighbor who's losing his home? No. Will I help the hungry people on the streets? No. Later today, Roy, on Progressive Radio Network website, Gary Noll website, my Facebook website, we will put up part two of my filming 16,000 homeless vets 4 weeks ago in Central Florida. And one of the stories is a real mind twist. In the back of a truck that is on a stand down, and a stand down is where a group of about 300 volunteers, all ex-military, came together once a year, and they give free sleeping bags and haircuts and showers and a meal and boots and anything that a person living homeless would need. There was even a chiropractor there and a medical doctor. I was allowed, because of the work I'd done a year ago, and they saw the film, so they allowed me to film. And there was one truck giving out bags of food. And the woman said, I'll tell you a story. And she said, I'm a part of the church, and this is a mainstream church, a Methodist church. And our minister and those of us who were volunteering were to be arrested. For what? Well, there's a local park in Orlando, and the park has a picnic area. And we went there on a Sunday and set up, and the homeless people, homeless vets mainly, would come. And as they would come, we would give them a meal, and they would sit there and eat the meal, and then we would clean up after them. And when everyone left, we would have the place completely clean, and then we'd leave. The neighbors, the people who live in the area, said, we don't want these homeless people coming into our city park. So the police came, and they were arresting us. For what? Using the park without a permit, which they wouldn't give. But aren't any people allowed to go in there and use the park? And isn't that what the barbecue's for? And those, yes, it is. Is there any law to prevent you from using it? No. These are just middle-class people? Yeah, they're just middle-class people. But they don't want to see people who are no longer middle-class getting a hot meal. Do you have other people who could show that they were arrested? Yes. And they brought over a vet, and this gentleman said, I was recently arrested for what? Well, I'm a homeless vet, and I went into the Veterans Park and sat on a bench to read a book. And I was there about 4 minutes, and they came over and said they were going to give me a ticket. And I said, why? And they said, because you're homeless. And I said, yes, it's not against law to be homeless. It is if you're a vet in Florida. But I'm in a veterans park. Doesn't matter. Hard to imagine. Wait till you see the film. The film will be up today. 47-minute film. So then, what are we doing to help the homeless? Nothing. What are we helping the largest single percentage increase in hungry and homeless children in America and California? Nothing. What are we doing to help the 600,000 injured vets who have filed for disability out of 1.3 million that served in Iraq and Afghanistan? Nothing. What are we doing to stop those in power from exploiting us? Nothing. But helping them. We watch their television, we take their medications, we take their vaccines, we eat their genetically engineered food. We listen to their radio programs. We wear their manufactured clothes. We keep our money in their banks. Well, how does that shift the power? It doesn't. It codifies it. Thank you, sir, for your comments. Hope that gives you a different perspective. Have a nice day, everyone.
Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tablefeld.